now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, welcome to the Game Football Podcast from The Times. I'm Hugh Wizencroft. Thank you once again for joining us for another special edition of the Game Podcast, because we are joined by the former Stoke City boss, the former Middlesbrough and West Bromwich Albion manager, Tony Pulis, is here alongside Matt Lawton and Tom Clark. Tony, how are you?
Yeah, very good, thank you. Yeah, looking forward to the programme.
How have you been, just generally? You left Sheffield Wednesday at the end of, I think, 2020. It's fair to say it's a mad world at the moment. it just is, in football and outside of football. How have you found things?
Yeah, I think it takes you a while. Having been in the game, I was 16 years of age, and then going right through 64, 65 next birthday. It's my first real long break. And it takes a while to adjust to things. But I live in a beautiful part of the world. And we're very, very lucky to have three wonderful children and seven grandchildren. That keeps you pretty busy. I still go to games, still do, you know, bits and pieces. I've done stuff with in other sports as well as football. So, yeah, been keeping myself busy.
Good, good. And we're going to come to some of the stuff going on in football at the moment, your opinions on it a little bit later on. But there is a very specific reason that you've come here. And it's interesting you mentioned that time with your grandchildren as well, because your time away has allowed you to take a closer look at academies in football. Just tell us how that developed.
Well, it's just my little grandson, you know, joined a very, very good academy, a very well-run academy. And being a grandparent, wanting to go and watch him play football, you know, being a young lad, being football mad, it just developed over a period, really. Going in and watching him train first and then playing in games, looking at the setup more than I'd ever done before as a manager. Although I'd been at football clubs that run academies, you know, the academy system is an empire within an empire. You know, they've actually got more people now working in academies than they have in really the professional side of the big clubs. And, you know, you were concentrating on winning football matches at the top level. I'd always get the kids over and play on a Friday against the first team, so I'd have a good understanding. If there was youth games, I'd go and watch youth games. I'd always talk to the youth coaches. But that was about as much as I put into that area. So actually going to watch the little and train and play just sparked me off, really, to find out more about the system, more about the way it was run, how it was run, you know, obviously the standards and everything else. And yeah, it's been interesting.
You've taken a closer look at academies alongside Matt Lawton. You've written a fantastic piece. You can read it on the Times app right now. Matt, tell us the journey, if you like, that you went on with Tony to discover a little bit more about academies.
It was quite a few months ago, wasn't it, that he mentioned that he was doing this piece of research because motivated by being on the touchline as a grandparent, standing there with parents, with families, and watching these kids. But also, I think what Tony was observing was the commitment, not just that the kids make in academy football, but the families make, the parents make, massive commitment. You know, Tony's grandson will be playing games that are 150 miles from home. So mum or dad that day is doing a 300-mile journey to for an 8-year-old. And when you read the literature that is distributed by the clubs, it's a huge commitment. They demand a commitment. There's a code of conduct for the parents. And it's brilliant. It was set up 10 years ago, this elite performance plan for players. by the Premier League because they did want to produce more homegrown players. They did want to improve the standards and produce better technically gifted players. And we can see the benefits of that. We can see the Phil Fodens and players like that that are coming out of the system now. They are technically better than perhaps the players of previous generations. But what interested Tony and what interested me from a journalistic perspective was that here was a guy that's managed, have you managed more than 1,000? You're one of the people that's managed more than 1,000 games, aren't you?
Yeah, about 1,250 or 1,300.
50 years in football. Yeah. But what interested me particularly, and I think what interested us as a paper, was that here was somebody that has been in the game for 50 years that was actually expressing concern for those who don't make it. And I thought that's what was such a, what made it such a good story, that what Tony is pushing for and what he's, this proposal he's taken to the Premier League and to the PFA is that more needs to be done for the kids who are rejected. You know, I worked with Dave Collins at the Sunday Times last year, and we did the whole sort of background piece on that terrible story about Jeremy Whiston, the kid at Man City who gets let go at 16 just before he's about to do his GCSEs. 2 years later, you know, the dream has died. He sees some of his mates that he spent the previous years with now making it as footballers. And, you know, he took his own life. A desperately sad story. But there are lots of examples of that. You know, one of the parents that Tony spoke to talked about it taking them 2 years to get their son back. You know, we touched on this in the piece. 2 years, he was broken for 2 years. They've got him back on track now. He's now gone to university and he's getting an education. And that was what impressed me about what he's done. This massive piece of research, he's put a lot of work into it, and it's about, as he says in his research, it's about the 95% that don't make it.
Okay, we're going to pick up on a few of those things. I'll do them in the order that you mentioned them there, Matt. Let's talk about families first. I think the weight of expectation that families have in football is huge. And at times you think it's maybe inspired by what they see and read. I mean, we're talking about Erling Haaland going to Manchester City. His dad's his intermediary. He's going to make a huge sum of money. It's you know, they might as well have announced them as the new winners of the Euro Millions. You know, it is beyond life-changing for some families. Do you think that now that we see more intermediaries, the rules changed a couple of years ago around agents and more families are involved with deals, that certain people do see that as a way of them, you know, if their son does make it, changing their lives as well?
Well, I think there's the relevant point about families is this, is that if your kid is in an academy, if you go in, you know, I think I put in the piece, it's like Willy Wonka's chocolate factory. If you walk into an academy setup, and some of the setups I've gone and watched my grandson playing are just absolutely fantastic. You know, the pitches are wonderful. You know, they give them kit, they give them boots, you know, they supply everything. The balls that they play with are absolutely, it's top draw. Mm. And families who are not used to, I've been fortunate to be in football all my life, so I understand it's the norm at most clubs, especially at the top end of the leagues. Families have never seen this before. The parents, the mothers, they've never, so the dream, they get bought really, or taken into this dream of their youngster coming through this system. And like you say, they read the papers, they have a look at the great rewards at the top end of it if their kids get through and become top players. My concern, and it is a massive worry, is that the parents actually spend so much time following their kids or taking their children to 3 nights a week academy football, then academy football on Saturdays, that it just takes their lives completely over. And the kids, you know, every youngster should have a dream, and they should have an opportunity and a chance to become a footballer. You know, you should never take that away from young players. So they give it everything they've got. But the quality that's needed and the ability that's needed is so fine at the top level, it's frightening. And looking at the way the systems run, the amount of players in the system, you know, you look at it and you think, well, you know, the chances of them coming through are so minimal, it's frightening. But the parents along the way have given up so much for that dream, and the kids as well. It's frightening. And there should be, in my opinion, a safety net. What happened in, 10 years ago? The Premier League put a proposal together that the kids should have more time playing football. And to do that, they took a couple of hours away from their education. So, you know, the balance is not correct and it's not right. And there's so many people that drop out of the system at different ages that they need protection. And that protection, as I've said, I've written it out in my piece, how I would do it. And I don't want to come and sit here and criticise the academies. It's a wonderful, as I say in my piece, it's one of the, it is one of the great youth policies in world football. You know, what Warriors provide is just extraordinary. The unfortunate thing is there's so many people drop out of the system that I think that with people giving everything, and I mean everything for their player, for their boy to be a player, there has to be a safety net for the lad, but also something that the parents can grab hold of as well.
Onto those then that don't make it, and that safety net. What do you think should be provided for these young players that drop out of academies?
Well, what I've done, I've split the country up into six different regions, six different areas, and I would align the professional clubs with colleges and universities in those areas. So what I would do, I would have a dual scholarship. At 16, there's a massive, massive fallout. That's when scholars, you come out of school and you become a scholar. At 16 years of age, I think there's 500 boys a year get released. 500 boys. So that's 500 families. You know, and the families could have three or four, it could be three or four children that the father has not neglected, but hasn't given as much time to them as what he's given to the lad in the academy. So you've got all that going on. So at 14, I would have two mentors at each club, a mentor that would look after a youngster from 14 to 16 years of age. That's a very crucial, crucial time in the kid's development. Someone who would monitor him, go to his school, look at what his strengths are on the educational side, almost put together a bespoke educational program for him. Now, at 16, if he signs, if he gets a scholarship, he goes into the football club. If he doesn't, that 14 and 16, if you look at it, they're told about 6 weeks before they take their GCSE exam. You know, that can ruin kids going into that exam. So what I would say is that at 16, that mentor then would have prepared and had a proposal ready for one of the colleges or one of the universities who alongside the football club is working to be able to put that kid into that college. And that college would look after him in the area that he's strong at. But not only that, we would run, hopefully, a games programme in the six areas. So the kid goes in, he's not had, you know, he could have been at the club since seven. So he's had, or is it 9 years? Mm. 9 years at that football club playing, turning up, training three nights a week, playing on a weekend. Football's in him. It's like a drug. So putting him in the university or the college that has a games programme as well, not only does he get an education and something he wants to do and something that he's strong on, but also he has a games programme where he can train twice a week, three times a week, and then have a game on a Saturday. So although you've eased him away from the disappointment and the failure, you're actually taking him into an area where the dual scholarship comes in, but also he has a chance to regurgitate him through the system from 16 to 21 or to 23, where professional clubs might look at him again and bring him back in. So that's one of the safety nets. If he's taken on as a scholar at 16 and he goes into the club, he has to make football. He has to make football the priority. But I would then put in place 1 day a week and two nights a week on Skype, where again, whatever his strengths are, and like I say, it's a bespoke educational programme for each individual player. That mentor then, a different mentor, then takes over that duty of looking after and that duty of care, which is ever so important for me, to make sure that it's not just his football that he's looking at. He's also looking at that side of the education as well. And that goes through to 18. At 18 is the next big dropout. If he loses a place or is not taken on at 18, if he gets his qualifications, with hopefully we would or passed, he can then go into that college or university till he's 21. So he's looked after all the way through till he's 21, 22, 23 years of age. So we haven't got this situation where everything or nothing. And that's where it is at the moment. It's everything for the parents, everything for the boy at 16. And if it doesn't work, you know, some clubs are better than other clubs at looking after them when they release them. Mm. But it's still such a massive disappointment.
To understand the scale of what Tony's talking about here, Hugh, is just look at some of the statistics. 0.5%. So the game we watched on Sunday, 0.5% of those kids that we're watching, the under nines, under tens, will actually have a career in football. 0.5%. But even then, at that age, they're making that kind of commitment as families. But even when these are the staggering bits. The lads that get the scholarships at 16, which is a big deal, they are within touching distance of becoming professional footballers. When they then get taken on as professional apprentices at 18, 78% of the kids in the academy system that get taken on at 18 are no longer in football by the time they're 22. So again, it's the dropout rate to find those gems, to find those Phil Fodens, as we've mentioned, to find those kind of players, to unearth that kind of talent. This is the point. There's 10 to 12,000 kids in the academy system at any one time, 3,500 in the Premier League, to find those players. And Tony's point is that you need those players because there's 10,000 matches every season in the games programme under the Premier League umbrella. So you need all those bodies, and they're all great players. Like, crikey, we were watching this game on Sunday. They're brilliant. Yeah. Everyone's doing Ronaldo step overs. You know, they're all incredibly skillful, partly helped by the fact that they're playing on pitches that you could have a game of tennis on. You know, it's wonderful. You know, because, you know, where we were, you've got the state of the art building. On one side are the Premier League pitches that the Premier League players train on. The other side is the academy. But it was immaculate, wasn't it?
Yeah, just fantastic. Yeah.
But the point is, the dropout rates are enormous. So few of them make it. And I think what's motivating Tony here, looking at his own grandson, is he doesn't want his education to drop off. One of the statistics that one of the experts he spoke to said that at 9-10, when they do their SATs at primary school, actually, apparently, academy footballers are slightly above average when they do their SATs. By the time they're 16, they're below average because they've committed. It's come at a cost. You know, their education has been compromised.
In the piece, it's described as an industry within an industry. Listening to what you're both saying, do we think that there are too many players being taken in? Or, you know, you talked about Willy Wonka's chocolate factory. You know, it's got everything in there. There's a part of me that has always thought that some of the things that I see, I've got friends who have kids at academies of some of our Champions League teams, and they are taken in with the director of football. They have their picture taken with a contract in front of them. They hold up a shirt with their name on the back. They're taken into the stadium. They have pictures and they're 8 or 9 years old. And it looks great when we see them on TV and this player has got a picture from when they're a kid and they're about to score the winning goal in the FA Cup final. And we can use that to say, look where they started. But you don't see all the kids, of course, who haven't made it to that level. But they've been treated as if they are a player of that Champions League team.
Yeah. A story that I had a couple of years ago, and I'm loath to name the club, but they are a Champions League club because they're very sensitive about it and they've stopped doing it now. But they were lit the day that that 9-year-old was signing. They would send a Hummer limousine to the family home. So the kids, and I mentioned it in the piece today, the kids and their mum and dad get in the back of a limousine. And this is absolutely true. When I put it to the club, they denied it. And they actually threatened me with legal action. And then I was on a skiing holiday, a lad's skiing holiday, a few months later. And I didn't know everybody on the trip. It was one of those where it was friends of friends. And this guy says to me, you're a sports journalist, aren't you? And I said, yeah. He goes, oh, my kid's at this club. He's 11, blah, blah, blah. I said, all right, okay. I said, just out of interest, what was it like the day that he signed when he was 9? Unbelievable, he said, unbelievable. I didn't even have to prompt him, and I didn't, honestly, he said, Hummer limousine was sent to the house. Mm-hmm. I said, you haven't got any pictures of that, have you? And he goes, yeah, I have. So anyway, so I then got, when I then got home, I thought, I'm on holiday, I'm not going to have the row here. I got home and I rang the person at the club that I'd spoken to previously. And I said, so imagine the scene. There I am. I'm on a mountainside and I'm suddenly looking at pictures of a kid, one of your kids in a Hummer limousine. You told me that they didn't use Hummer limousines. Anyway, they've stopped doing that now. And I did ring another because one of the complaints being made by the clubs was that it was these kind of tactics that were being used to prize kids from other clubs. And I rang one of the other clubs and I said, you know, do you want to make a complaint about this? And I always remember what he said. And it was another comms director at one of the other big Premier League clubs. And he said, we're not getting into this. He said, for all I know, we're flying them in helicopters.
I've always thought that academies shouldn't be named after the Premier League team. I also don't think the players should be put into the same kits as the Premier League players with the sponsor on the front, because it gives them the impression that they already play within the club. Instead of saying at the end of this process, you know, maybe some of you could go into the club, could become part of the club.
Yes.
Instead, they say you are part of the club. And then at 16 years old, they say you're out of the club, and that I think can crush players.
I think there's a lot of there's a lot of pros for and people against it, but the main issue is that they need a games program. They need a games program for the elite, because those lads have to play every week, and that the ones who are at the top and you know the top level of the groups need to play, and they are supported by a group that maybe have a chance and a group that has got no chance. And that's what I'm trying to say. The people who've got no chance or just the smallest of chances, they have to be protected. They have to be looked after. The we know what the elite are. Matty's named two of them already. We know which ones have come through and absolutely fantastic. What we never talk about and what we never discuss and what we never put, I don't think, in the Premier League and the PFA at this present moment don't put enough effort into, is actually looking after that big group of players who along the way fall by the wayside. There needs to be a safety net. And you've got to have the number of players in, as Matt's just said, 10,000 games a season. And it's needed. Those players need those games. The elite players need the games. The clubs need those games to get the elite players to a level that they want them to. The ones who are there to fill the spaces and produce the numbers needed, they're the ones we have to look after.
The train is now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Is false hope an issue at these football clubs? The messaging, just tell us about the messaging from the coaches. In your experience and your time in football, I don't know if you ever spoke to your youth coaches about how they speak to the parents, how they speak to the families. Do they give certain players the impression that they are in the system, everything's going well, and then they're maybe surprised when they're released?
I think you've got to give youngsters the opportunity and a chance to dream. And their dream at that age is to become a professional footballer. They're given the opportunity that you cannot believe. You know, the system and everything else is, as Matt said, it's just off the scales. It's absolutely fantastic. And the kids have to have that chance. Some will develop earlier than others, but they've got to, you know, when I was a young lad, I wanted to play. I wanted to be a footballer. I didn't want no one standing in my way. I just wanted to do that. And these kids are the same. They go there, they're sold... you know, a dream within a dream, really. But you've got to give them that chance. You cannot take that chance away. What you've got to do is that if and when they drop out, there's got to be a safety net for them. Because Premier League clubs now, especially the top clubs, are making absolute fortunes out of, you know, either loaning players out or selling academy players. There's so much money in the system now that we are developing and producing top players. So that money should be regurgitated back through, like I say, for the 95%. The 5% look after themselves. The 95%, we have to give protection. We used to have more of a duty care in protecting those lads through those stages, but also protecting the families, protecting the parents. You know, the parents give so much up and so much time and effort to, you know, to follow the kids around. You know, they get the dream as well. They get that injection of spirit that my boy's going to be a player. So you have to protect them and you have to protect the families.
It's an interesting question you raise, though, Hugh, because as part of this journey, and it's been much, I have to say, I've jumped on the end of he's done all the work. I've piggybacked him right at the end and for a piece in the Times. But as part of this process, we've looked at the literature that is sent to parents right from the beginning, right from the age of eight. And these brochures, you know, because it is still a competitive industry to get the kid to come to your academy. And over 60-odd pages, while I'm sure there is some messaging, a very deliberate messaging, warning them that you know, it's a slim chance of success in the long term. You read through the brochures, there's very little language that's focuses on the negative, focuses on the possibility of failure. It's all positive, 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 even down to sections about what you say to your child's school about why they should be given a day release. And it actually sort of, it's almost within the brochure, coaching parents what they need to say to the headmaster or whoever about, look, this is a brilliant opportunity for my son, therefore you should let him miss school, basically. So it's very much, when you read these brochures, it's all about the dream.
I think, you know, I have spoke about this to parents, and the parents say to me, and I always say, make sure his education doesn't slip while you're doing this. And they always say to me, you know, we're so fortunate that we've got this opportunity. This is 8-year-olds that we've got this opportunity to actually go to Premier League football grounds, academies, and play against Premier League, young Premier League players. So, you know, it's a wonderful, wonderful experience. And I'm not taking any, you know, I think the setup and everything else, like I say, in my, I don't think there's a better setup in the world than what we've got. But they know, the Premier League, the PFA, know about the drop-off. They know what's going to happen. It's there. It's in front of them. It's been 10 years now. Something has to be done, you know. And if, listen, at 16, if a kid then fails or drops off, but then it goes to a college, a top college, where he's doing something bespoke but still playing football at a decent level, you know, what a safety net that is for the family. As a parent, if I had that in place and I knew that, I'd be much more comfortable and maybe a little bit more relaxed in respect of the pressure I'm putting on the kid to try and make him that elite player. So it's not just a duty and care for a duty and care. It's actually a responsibility that that I think the governing bodies have got to help the parents with.
Which bodies do you think can help you execute your plan? Is it all up to the FA? Do you need the Premier League to do this?
No.
The EFL? And even other bodies in terms of supporting the mental health, other aspects of what you've been talking about, education?
Well, all of them if they can get together. But, you know, the Premier League are set away from the FA. So they could set the games programme up without any problems. They don't need to go through the FA to get a games programme set up. So they really would be, they would do it quicker and most probably more professional than the other bodies. But everybody has a responsibility. You know, this is our industry. You know, they're part of our industry. So they have, in my view, a responsibility to get their heads together and start putting something in place. Like I say, that when it comes, when that drop-off comes, those kids are looked after, and they're looked after in a way that they can turn around in 10 years after they'd left the football club and say, I had a wonderful experience. You can't believe the experience I had, and I just failed. I was just short. But look what I've done and look what I've achieved since. Whereas at the moment, it's dropped off. They're left to one side. And, you know, like I say, some clubs are better than others at looking after them. But, you know, and Crystal Palace have brought out a four-year thing. That's aftercare. Mm. I'm not talking about aftercare. I'm talking about the care while they're going through the system, which I think, you know, is much more important than when they leave.
There was the survey was done last year, which we referenced in the paper today, which was that 88% of lads that have been let go felt they hadn't been sufficiently supported by their clubs after they'd been released. I thought that was really telling. But I think the thing is, coming back to your question, Premier League has got so much resource to do this. You know, there's so much money in the game. You know, rather than be giving, you know, and I know players hate this, but rather than keep giving players £300,000 a week, you could take a bit of that money away and think about the kids that don't make it, but who are actually on the pitch every week, year after year, helping those kids realise that dream and get to that level.
One of the interesting things, though, for me and why I asked it is, you know, there's all this talk about an independent regulator and more reach of the government into football. You wonder whether they could come up with guidelines if they are going to, you know, interfere with football and change things, to make sure that football clubs are supporting these young people. If they're going to make them do things in other areas, this is as important as any other.
I think what you just said there, Hugh, is very smart. I think an independent regulator could be the one saying, you know, if you know, hopefully they can respond to Tony. He's already been spoken to them. But if there is a reluctance to engage at this stage, then yeah, an independent regulator that said, what provision are you making for the academy kids that don't make it, and apply some pressure. The TV deals they're doing are billions and billions and billions. The money is there. They can do this.
Just finally on it, you're in a very unique position, Tony, in terms of being a grandfather of one of these players in an academy due to your massive experience in the game. What conversations do you have with your child and your son or daughter-in-law, the parents of your grandchild and your grandchild, about this experience that they are all going through and you as a family?
Well, first and foremost, the club he's at is really, really very, very good. And they do look after the boys. You know, I've spoken to officers there who have said, is everything all right with my grandson? Everything at home okay? Is there anything we can do? Anything we can't do? If we can help? And they're really good. They are top class, really. The most important thing, and the thing I say to him every week, is he's got to enjoy it. You know, he's 8 years of age. Football is a sport at that age. You've got to, you know, he's got to go out and want to play and enjoy it, irrespective of how he plays, if he plays well or badly. You know, just enjoy the game. And luckily, obviously, my daughter has come through, you know, my son and my two daughters have come through a family where dad's been involved in football all the time. So they understand the ups and downs. But schoolwork is very, very important for my grandchildren. Massively important.
I didn't realise he was so young. Does it worry you at all?
No, it doesn't worry me as long as it doesn't affect his education.
All right, that's a proper grandfather looking out for his grandson there. It's all about your schoolwork, son. Listen, Tony, we do want to talk to you about football. What you've come up with there, by the way, a fantastic plan and a plan that is needed in football. So I wish you all the best with that in particular. But as we've got you, and we haven't spoke to you for a while, of course, we mentioned not managing since the end of 2020. We wanted to ask you really about football at the moment. And funnily enough, on the Game podcast, we've had an argument recently, given the comments that Jurgen Klopp made about Antonio Conte and the styles of football in the Premier League right now. And you were one of those managers who, that public persona of your style of football was criticised at times. When you hear things like that and you hear the best managers in the game saying they were a little bit too defensive this week, well, that's not for me, and being a little bit snooty about styles of football, how does that make you feel?
I think Klopp just had his pockets picked and responded on it. He's not used to dropping points at Anfield. We're not used to dropping points full stop. So the reaction didn't surprise me in respect of that. I've got great respect for Antonio. I think he's everywhere he's been, he's done a wonderful job. He does it in a certain way. They're very organised. They're very well set up. But I think he will turn Tottenham round not just to a winning team. I think once he gets, and hopefully he'll bring in more players. He likes players of quality, but he also likes them to work hard. And you know, people have got different opinions. The game is all about winning games. If as a, you know, I get young managers ringing me up all the time, and I say, brilliant. You know, you can have your philosophies, you can believe in certain things and everything else. If you don't win football matches, you ain't going to be in the job very long. If you don't overachieve, if you don't pour out a team that's competitive week in, week out, you ain't going to be in this game very, very long.
Does that help coaching in this country?
I think the great thing with the academy, and we haven't touched on it as well, is some of the coaches that have been in the system for the 10 years. If you look at Steve Cooper, just one example at Forest. Steve worked in the academy and has come through now and is managing Forest. So that's another plus for the academies. Football has changed enormously since I started. And it's lovely, you know, the change happens and you have to move with change. Mm. And it's lovely, and hopefully it's lovely to see younger coaches getting the opportunity and the chance in the leagues who've worked in the academies, and hopefully they prove themselves good enough to manage in the Premier League.
Coaches do need time. They need to get better. They need their methods to come across. From the time you started in management and coaching, the average time of a manager at any club in the Football League and the Premier League is shrinking and shrinking. I think it's down to about 18 months now.
Yeah. When I started off, there was a great manager and a great person called Alex Stock. And Alex said to me that, you know, every manager should be given 3 years, 1 year to assess what he's got, the second year to change what he's got to what he wants, and the third year then to start winning. And those 3 years were really, really important to lay down a foundation for the club then to push on. Like you say, you know, if you lose 4 or 5 games on the bounce now, you know, the pressure's on you through the papers and
and it's our fault.
Yeah, and us on the podcast, of course, as well. If anyone ever listens to us, out of the Premier League managers at the moment, some of the managers coming through, maybe in the Football League as well, who's caught your eye? I know you mentioned Steve Cooper there, big game coming up for them in terms of the Championship playoffs as well, maybe a place in the Premier League. But any other coaches who've caught your eye?
I think Graham Potter, Brighton. You know, the story there, and at Brentford. I think those two clubs, the way they've gone around building their football clubs, brand new stadiums, brand new training grounds, but also being successful on the pitch. And their great success is their recruitment. Their recruitment has been absolutely outstanding. For the budgets that they've got and the people they're competing against, those two football clubs really, really stand out for me.
How far do you think Graham Potter can go? Do you think he's destined for a Champions League team, the biggest clubs in football?
Well, the issue you've got is that a lot of the owners now at the top clubs are actually foreign owners, and they get dictated by agents who are foreign agents who will always try and promote foreign coaches or foreign managers. I hope Graham gets the opportunity. You know, I think he's, like I say, he's done exceptionally well at Brighton. He's had good support, obviously, from Tony, right down, you know, Paul, Barbara. They've had a solid base that they've built off. But no, it'd be lovely to see, you know, people like Graham and Steve Cooper and, you know, the likes coming through and eventually getting good clubs. You know, Eddie's got a great chance now at Newcastle to put something together. Yeah, it'd be really nice to see more English or British coaches, not English, Welsh, British coaches in the top level.
Do you think British coaches are a little bit disrespected at that top level? Maybe undervalued is the word that I mean.
Yeah, I think there's some very, very, there's some top coaches out there. You know, I just go back, I go back, you know, and I've got great respect for Pep and people at the top. Well, yeah, real great respect. You know, I once watched, as a young lad, I went to, where was it? It was Bath University to watch Malcolm Allison put a coaching session on. And Malcolm, it was Bristol Rovers, there was under 18s, Bristol Rovers against Bristol City. And Malcolm took, I think it was Bristol City to one side and set them up to play without a centre forward. You know, 30 years later, 40 years later, you know, Pep's a genius because he can play a game of football without a centre forward. Well, Malcolm was doing that 40 years ago. The problem is, I'm most probably at an age, I'm the only one who can remember that. Everyone's younger than me.
And I was about to say, France won the World Cup in 98 without a proper centre forward.
Well, and, you know, the systems regurgitate. They do regurgitate. You know, the bottom line is that Liverpool play and Man City play, they've got great, great players. You know, you have a look at the money that that those two clubs have spent to get the great players in. Now, then you need a manager who can mould them. And the two of them, like I say, have done that to perfection. And I'm sure Antonio, hopefully, Daniel will behave and spend some money and give them the opportunity to bring players in, because I think they could go to the next level.
A lot of the coaches, when they're not employed, we've seen have gone away and tried to improve their style or add things. Have you been doing that, visiting clubs or watching games and trying to pick up little tips?
Yeah, I do a little bit for TV and radio. But I'll pick my games to watch. I've also got involved. I've also enjoyed looking at other sports, the way coaches work in those sports. You know, talking to people from different sports. It's been good. It's you know, I've been in the game, like I say, for a very, very long time, and being a manager is all consuming. The opportunity to have time to do what you want to do and to spend time. And like I say, I've got 7 grandchildren. My son was at Inter Miami last year with Beckham's franchise. Wow. He's now taken on a top coach's job at FC Miami. So we've been over there for 3 weeks to watch.
I was going
to
say you are looking tanned. You know the
no, that's the South Coast.
You want to get out of this office.
The
Greek
and go down.
God body is there. You know, you can't see Tony at the moment, but he's looking in good health.
Yeah, but no, I've been over there and had a good look. At what my son's doing and the team he's putting together and everything else. So it's been. Yeah, it's lovely. Football's never too far away from our household.
That's interesting. An opportunity abroad, maybe back here. Have you thought about your options? Would you like to come back to managing soon?
At the moment, I'm enjoying being able to get up every morning, walk down the coffee shop with my wife on the beach and, you know, take time out, really. And I do what I want to do when I want to do it. And not subservient to looking after 20 babies, cuddling them and protecting them and trying to get a result every week. Yeah, it's been good.
Tony, it's been a pleasure to speak to you. As I say, once again, best of luck with the plan in terms of the academies. Make sure you check out Tony and Matt Lawton's piece on the Times app right now. Tony, make sure you come back and speak to us again soon, because we would love to speak to you about all of the great football action going on at the moment. Thank you all for listening. Much more to come from us on the Game podcast, but make sure you're subscribed. You can check us out at thetimes.co.uk/thegame.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.